First published in 1847 under the male-sounding pen name Currer Bell, it's Charlotte Bronte's classic story of the transforming power of love, with a bit of politics, feminism, religion and social comment thrown in for good measure. Our adaptation of Jane Eyre is in four parts, and it stars Sophie Thompson and Ciarán Hinds. This is part one, Jane the Child.
A dreary November day, a cold winter wind, a pale bank of mist and cloud, wet lawn, storm-beaten shrubbery, ceaseless rain, sweeping, sweeping, sweeping. There is no possibility of taking a walk today.
Jane Eyre by Charlotte Bronte. Dramatized for radio in four episodes by Micheline Wonder. Starring Sophie Thompson as Jane Eyre and Ciarán Hinds as Mr. Rochester. With Anne Scalybras, Julian Glover, and Elizabeth Bell. Episode 1, Jane the Child.
Why, here you are, hiding again, and you are reading. How dare you?
Oh, you are a cruel boy. I hate you.
Do not answer back. Give me that book.
I am reading it.
There.
Oh, let go of my hair.
Rat, nasty stupid rat. You are a beast and a beggar.
I hate you. I hate you.
Help.
I hate you.
You're attacking me.
Help.
Help. Help.
Yes.
Bessie, come quickly. Oh, my poor John. Stop it at once. Oh, John, darling. Oh, she's mad. Bessie, hurry.
Oh, no.
Oh.
You're worried. John, come here.
Yeah. Take her to the red room and lock her in.
You can't touch me.
Now, come along, Miss Jane.
Don't talk to her. She's like a mad cat.
I hate you. I hate you all.
Oh, now, quiet now, Miss Jane.
I will be warmer in the middle of frost and snow. I would be happier in a graveyard than at the tea table here. I hate you all.
For shame, Miss Eyre, to strike a young gentleman. You're your master.
How is he my master? I'm not a servant.
You are less than a servant, for you do nothing for your king. Now you must be a good girl and think over your wickedness.
I am not wicked.
You must be aware that you are under obligations to Mrs. Reed. If she were to turn you out, you would have to go to the poorhouse. You should be useful and pleasant.
I hate Mrs. Reed, and I hate John Reed.
God will punish you, Miss Jane. What have you to say?
Nothing.
Well, I will leave you to repent your wickedness. Say your prayers, child.
Oh, Bessie, don't leave me alone. I do not hate you.
Just think about your sins.
No, Bessie.
Oh, no.
This is the red room. The carpet is red. The table at the foot of the bed is covered with a crimson cloth. The two large windows have their blinds always drawn down. It was in this chamber that Mr. Reed breathed his last. Here he lay. And from here, his coffin was borne by the undertaker's men. For the room is chilly. By the window, a large looking glass. Oh, what a pale face. What glittering eyes. Is that me? This is that Jane Eyre. Why do they always think me naughty?
Jane Eyre.
My headache. Oh, where can I never please? No one dares talk John, even though he twists the necks of the pigeons and he sets dogs at the sheep. It will be dark soon.
Dark.
I am. Wicked. Perhaps they will forget me. And I shall starve to death here. Mr. Reed would have treated me kindly. Perhaps he will revisit the earth to punish the wrong and avenge the oppressed. Perhaps his spirit will rise before me like a ghost.
Ghost.
What's that? No, no.
Dark. No moon.
Take me out.
Dark.
I want to get to Delphi, Betty. Betty, come quickly. Hold on, I didn't want to stay here.
Stay.
I mean, come, Betty. Forgive me. I am sorry.
Stay.
You don't leave me here. Stay. I cannot bear it. Betty. Oh, Betty.
Here, Miss Jane.
What is that fire?
It is only the nursery fire.
Oh, my head hurts.
I will shade the candle.
How are you feeling?
Who is that?
It is Mr. Lloyd, the apothecary.
Why? What is the matter with me?
You fell sick in the red room with crying. Bessie, I'll fetch her something to eat.
Bessie, I will not be long.
Well now, why do you cry so much, Miss Jane Eyre?
I cry because I am miserable.
And why are you miserable?
Oh, shut up in a room where there is a ghost. No one will go into the red room at night, and it was cruel to shut me up alone without a candle.
Are you afraid now, in daylight?
No. No, I am just unhappy.
But why? Gateshead Hall's a very beautiful house. Are you not very thankful to have such a fine place to live at?
Bessie says I have less right to be here than the servant.
Have you any other relations?
Don't know. I asked Aunt Reed once and she said I might tell some poor low relations called Eyre that she knew nothing about.
If you have such, would you like to go to them?
No. I should not like to belong to poor people.
Well, not even if they were kind to you?
No. I do not think so.
Would you like to go to school?
Well, I think I should like to go to school. Bessie says they have paintings and landscapes. They sing songs and translate French books.
You enjoy reading.
Oh, yes, I...
Here we are. A bun and some cheesecake. And your favourite plate with a bird of paradise on it.
Oh, thank you, Bessie. You are the kindest being in the world.
I'll leave you now, Jane.
Goodbye, Mr. Lloyd.
Bessie, walk to the door with me. Goodbye, Jane. How did the child come here?
Her father was a poor clergyman, and her mother married him against the wishes of her friends. Her grandfather, Reed, cut her off without a shilling. After they'd been married a year, her father caught the typhus fever. Her mother took the infection from him, and they died within a month of each other. Poor Miss Jane.
Indeed.
Ah, come in, child. This is the little girl respecting whom I applied to you, Mr. Brocklehurst.
She is very small. What is her age?
10 years.
What is your name, little girl?
Jane Eyre, sir.
Well, Jane Eyre, are you a good child?
Perhaps the less said on that subject, the better, Mr. Brocklehurst.
I am sorry indeed to hear it. Come here, child. Do you know where the wicked go after death?
They go to hell, sir.
And what is hell?
A pit full of fire.
And should you like to fall into that pit and to be burning there forever?
No, sir.
What must you do to avoid it?
I must keep in good health and not die.
Oh, you see?
I hope that sigh is from the heart, and that you repent of ever having been the occasion of discomfort to your excellent benefactress. Do you say your prayers, night and morning?
Yes, sir.
Do you read your Bible?
Sometimes.
That proves you have a wicked heart. You must pray to God to change it, to take away your heart of stone and give you a new and clean one.
How is my heart to be changed? It is in my body.
Mr. Brocklehurst, I believe I intimated in my letter that this little girl has not quite the character and disposition I could wish. Should you admit her to Lowood School, I should be glad if the superintendent and teachers were requested to keep a strict eye on her, and above all, to guard against her worst fault, a tendency to deceit. I mention this in your hearing, Jane, that you may not attempt to impose on Mr. Brocklehurst.
Deceit is a sad fault in a child. It is akin to falsehood. And all liars will have their portion in the lake burning with fire and brimstone. She shall be watched, Mrs. Reed.
As for the vacations, she will, with your permission, spend them always at Lowood.
Indeed, Mrs. Reed.
Consistency, my dear Mr. Brocklehurst. I advocate consistency in all things.
Consistency, madam, is the first of Christian duties, and it has been observed in every arrangement connected with the establishment of Lowood. Plain fare, simple attire, unsophisticated accommodation, hardy and active habits. Such is the order of the day in the house and its inhabitants.
I will send her as soon as possible. I am anxious to be relieved of a responsibility that is becoming irksome.
I shall send Miss Temple notice that she is to expect a new girl. Goodbye, Mrs. Reed.
Goodbye, Mr. Brocklehurst. Jane!
Goodbye, Mr. Brocklehurst.
You may return to the nursery, Jane.
I'm not deceitful. If I were, I should say I loved you, but I declare I do not love you. Oh. I dislike you the worst of anybody in the world except John Reed.
Oh, Richard.
I will never call you aunt again as long as I live. I will never come to see you when I am grown up. And if anyone asks me how I liked you and how you treated me, I will say that you treated me with miserable cruelty, and the very thought of you makes me sick.
How dare you affirm that, Jane Eyre?
Because it is the truth. You think I have no feelings and that I can do without one bit of love or kindness, but I can't not live so, and you have no pity. Oh. I shall remember how you threw me into the Red Room and locked me up in there until my dying day. People think you were a good woman, but you're bad and hard-hearted.
Jane, what is the matter with you? I assure you, I desire to be your friend.
You told Mr. Brocklehurst I had a bad character, a deceitful disposition.
Jane, you do not understand. Children must be corrected for their faults.
Deceit is not my fault.
But you are passionate, Jane, that you must allow. Now return to the nursery, there's a dear, and lie down.
I am not your dear. I cannot lie down. Send me to school soon, Mrs. Reed, for I hate to live here. I open the glass door to the garden. The shrubbery is still. The black frost reigns, unbroken by sun and breeze. I run across the grass into the trees. There is no pleasure in the silent trees, the falling fir cones, the relics of autumn russet leaves swept by the wind in heaps. I lean against a gate and look into an empty field where no sheep feed, where the short grass is white with frost. What shall I do? What shall I do?
I brought you breakfast, Miss Jane.
I'm not hungry.
Oh, you must have some milk and bread. Here, I've wrapped some biscuits for you. Put them in your bag for the journey.
Oh, Bessie, you are so kind to me.
Well, Miss... Not always as much as I'd like.
I shan't miss your scolding, Bessie.
Such a funny little thing.
I don't think I shall ever be afraid of you again, Bessie, because I've got used to you. Anyway, I shall soon have another set of people to dread.
Oh, if you dread them, they'll dislike you.
As you do, Bessie.
I don't dislike you, miss. I believe I'm fonder of you than all the others.
You don't show it.
You sharp little thing.
Just now, I'm rather sorry to leave you.
Oh, just now, and rather. How coolly my little lady says it. I dare say now if I were to ask you for a kiss, you wouldn't give it to me. You'd say, rather not.
I'll kiss you and welcome, Bessie. Of course I will. Bend your head down to me. Oh, Bessie,
How far is it?
50 miles, my dear.
What a long way. Bessie, come with me, please. Come with me.
Now, Miss Jane, let go. Bessie. Come. We shall have our breakfast and I shall take you to the carriage.
The journey lasts an eternity. The gravel road is sodden by a recent thaw. The afternoon is wet and misty. The twilight deepens. We descend a valley dark with trees, a wild wind rushing through the woods. After an age, the journey is over.
Come in, my dear.
A parlour, papered walls, carpets, curtains, shining mahogany furniture. I warm my numbed fingers over the blaze of a fire.
You have travelled alone?
Yes, ma'am.
You must be tired.
A little, ma'am.
And hungry too, no doubt. Is this the first time you have left your parents to come to school?
My parents are dead.
How long have they been dead?
Ever since I can remember, ma'am.
Can you read and write and sew a little?
Yes, I can.
Well, I hope you will be a good child. You're in time for supper.
Come with me.
Helen!
Yes, Miss Temple?
Helen, Mrs. Jane Eyre. She has just arrived.
Look after her, will you?
Yes, Miss Temple.
Come with me, Jane.
Where are we going?
Supper. Here. Water. Horrid. And some cake.
Cake?
Horrid. Thin and stale. But don't mind everyone looking at you. It's because you haven't got your uniform yet. Go on, eat. I'm not very hungry. I understand. After supper, we have prayers and then bed. Lights out in 10 minutes. Come on.
Not yet dawn. A rush light. We file downstairs two and two into the schoolroom. Prayers. The reading of chapters from the Bible. An hour later, day is fully dawned.
Now we can have breakfast.
The refectory is a great, low-ceilinged, gloomy room. On two tables, smoke basins of something hot.
Oh, the porridge is burnt again. It's disgusting.
A servant brings in tea for the teachers, and the meal begins. Ravenous, and now very faint, I devour a spoonful. Each girl tastes the food and tries to swallow it. Breakfast is over, and none has breakfasted.
Silence, everyone.
Miss Maria Temple, the superintendent of Lowood. Tall, fair and shapely. Brown eyes, a fine penciling of long lashes. On each temple, dark brown hair in round curls. A dress of purple cloth, relieved by black velvet trimming. A gold watch shines at her girdle. A pale, clear complexion. A stately air and carriage.
Girls, you had this morning a breakfast which you could not eat. You must be hungry. I have ordered that bread and cheese should be served to all. It is to be done on my responsibility.
Lessons commence and continue till 5 o'clock. Dinner is served on two huge tin-plated vessels, from which rises a strong steam smelling of rancid fat. Potatoes and strange shreds of rusty meat are mixed together. Soon after 5, another meal. A small mug of coffee and half a slice of brown bread. Half an hour's recreation, then a glass of water, a piece of oat cake, prayers and bed. Such is my first day at Lowood. And each day following...
Helen Burns, you are leaning to one side. Stand straight. And hold your head up. What do you have to say?
I am sorry, Miss Scatcherd.
You dirty, disagreeable girl. You have not cleaned your nails this morning.
Please, Miss Scatcherd, she could not wash this morning as the water was frozen.
Silence, air. Burns, the switch. Immediately.
Helen leaves the class, goes into a small inner room where the books are kept, and returns with a bundle of twigs. Then she quietly unlooses her pinafore, and the teacher instantly and sharply inflicts on her neck a dozen strokes with the bunch of twigs. Not a tear rises to Helen's eyes.
Put the rod away, Burns, and consider your slatternly habits.
The evening is the pleasantest part of the day. The school is warmer than in the morning, the fire's being allowed to burn a little more brightly to make up for the lack of candles. It has snowed. A drift is forming against the window pane. Were you much hurt today?
Oh, I have forgotten it.
You must wish to leave, Lowood.
Why should I?
Mrs. Scatcherd is so cruel to you.
Not at all. She is severe. She dislikes my fault.
If she struck me with the rod, I should get it from her hand. I should break it under her nose.
If you did, Mr. Brocklehurst would expel you from the school. That would be a great grief to your relations. It is far better to endure patiently a smart which nobody feels but yourself than to commit a hasty action whose evil consequences will extend to all connected with you.
It is disgraceful to be flogged and sent to stand in the middle of a room full of people. I could not bear it.
It would be your duty to bear it if you could not avoid it.
Is Miss Temple as severe to you as Miss Scatcherd?
Miss Temple sees my errors and tells me of them gently. If I do anything worthy of praise, she gives me my due.
Well, then, with Miss Temple, you are good.
Yes, in a passive way. There is no merit in such goodness.
But there is. You are good to those who are good to you. If people were always kind and obedient to those who are cruel and unjust, the wicked people would have it all their own way.
You'll change your mind, I hope, when you grow older.
During January, February, and part of March, deep snow has prevented stirring beyond the garden walls, except to go to church. We have no boots. My ungloved hands are covered with chilblains. My feet inflamed with the torture of thrusting swelled, raw, and stiff toes into my shoes in the morning. One Sunday afternoon, Mr. Brocklehurst arrives.
Miss Temple, I find in settling accounts that a lunch consisting of bread and cheese has twice been served to the girls during the past weeks. How is this? Who introduced this innovation?
I did, sir. The breakfast was so ill-prepared that the pupils could not possibly eat it, and I dared not allow them to remain fasting until dinner time.
Madam, when you put bread and cheese instead of burnt porridge into these children's mouths, you may indeed feed their vile bodies. But you little think how you starve their immortal souls. Let me remind you, girls, of the exhortations of our blessed Lord, who called upon his disciples to take up their cross and follow him. Heed his warning, that man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceedeth out of the mouth of God.
But Mr. Brocklehurst...
Madam, my mission is to mortify in these girls the lusts of the flesh, to teach them to clothe themselves with shamefacedness and sobriety. Let the careless child who broke her slate come forward.
Oh, no. Don't be afraid, Jane. I saw it was an accident.
Fetch a stool. Place the child upon it. Ah, it is the new pupil. Miss Temple, teachers and children, you all see this girl. You observe she possesses the ordinary form of childhood. Who would think that the evil one had already found a servant and agent in her? You must shun this girl. This child, native of a Christian land worse than many a heathen. This girl is a liar. Let no one speak to her during the remainder of the day.
Courage, Jane. Down now, Jane. I've brought you some coffee and bread.
I'm not hungry.
Let me help you down.
Oh. Helen, why do you stay with a girl whom everybody hates and despises?
Oh, your hands are cold. You warm them. If all the world hated you and believed you wicked, if your own conscience absolved you from guilt, you would still not be without friends.
I know I should think well of myself, but that is not enough. If others don't love me, I would rather die than live.
Oh, hush, Jane. You think too much of the love of human beings. Angels see our tortures and recognize our innocence. God awaits only the separation of spirit from flesh to crown us with a full reward.
Oh, Helen.
I came on purpose to find you, Miss Eyre. I want you to come to my room. Helen, you may come too. Come and sit by the fire. Well, Jane, is it all over? Have you cried your grief away?
I'm afraid I shall never do that.
Why?
Because I have been wrongly accused.
We shall think you what you prove yourself to be, my child. Continue to act as a good girl and you will satisfy us. Now, some tea for you both.
Thank you, Miss Temple. Thank you, Miss Temple.
Jane, you have been charged with falsehood. What have you to say?
I think you should write to Mr. Lloyd, the apothecary. He will speak for me.
Very well. If his reply is favourable, you shall be publicly cleared from every imputation. To me, Jane, you are clear now. And Helen, how are you tonight? Have you coughed much today?
Not quite so much, I think.
And the pain in your chest?
It is a little better.
Toast and seed cake. We feast that evening as on nectar and ambrosia. And after tea, Miss Temple and Helen converse of things I have never heard of. Nations and times past, countries far away. Helen's eyes acquire a beauty of meaning, of movement, of radiance. Her soul sits on her lips. A week later, Miss Temple receives from Mr. Lloyd a corroboration of my honesty. I am cleared from every imputation of deceit. Thus relieved, I toil hard. I commence French and drawing. I sketch my first cottage, whose walls outrival in slope those of the Leaning Tower of Pisa. I draw houses and trees, paint imagined butterflies hovering over unblown roses, birds picking at ripe cherries, wren's nests enclosing pearl-like eggs. I would not now have exchanged Lowood with all its privations for Gateshead and its daily luxuries. The frosts of winter cease. The snows melt. Snowdrops peep out amongst the leaves. April advances to May with days of blue sky and placid sunshine. Wild primroses gleaming pale gold. But before May arrives, the school is transformed into a hospital. Semi-starvation and neglected colds predispose the pupils to infection. Helen has been ill now for some weeks. She is not with the fever patients. For her complaint is consumption. One evening, I have a great desire to see her.
Helen, are you awake?
Jane? Can't see you, Jane.
Let me kiss you, Helen. You have not seen me for so long. Oh, your forehead is cold. You are so thin.
Why are you here, Jane? It is past 11 o'clock.
I was thinking about you. I could not sleep till I had spoken to you.
You're just in time, I think.
Are you going home, Helen?
Yes.
Oh, Helen.
Are your feet up there, Jane? Come. Lie down. Cover yourself with my quilt.
I do not want to hurt you.
No. You won't. I'll put my arm around you. Oh, we must all die one day. And my illness is not painful. It is gentle and gradual. My mind is at rest. I leave no one to regret me. By dying young, I shall escape great sufferings. I have not qualities or talents to make my way very well in the world.
But where are you going to, Helen?
I am going to God.
What is God?
My Maker and yours, who will never destroy what He created.
Do you believe in heaven, Helen?
Oh, I believe God is good. Dear Jane,
I cannot let you go.
I feel as if I could sleep now. Do not leave me, Jane.
I'll stay with you, dear Helen. No one shall take me away.
Are you warm?
Yes.
Good night, Jane.
Good night, Helen. When I awake, it is day.
Come along, my dear.
Where am I going?
Back to your own bed, Jane.
And Helen? Helen!
Helen is at peace, my dear.
The fever drew public attention to Lowood, and slowly improvements in diet and clothing were introduced. I remained at Lowood 6 years as a pupil and 2 as a teacher. My life was uniform and not unhappy. I had the means of an excellent education and a great delight in pleasing my teachers, especially Miss Temple. After 8 years, she married and removed with her husband to a different county. From the day she left, I began to desire liberty, and eventually decided to advertise.
A young lady accustomed to tuition is desirous of meeting with a situation in a private family. She is qualified to teach the usual branches of a good English education, together with French, drawing, and music.
If J.E. is in a position to give satisfactory references as to character and competence, a situation can be offered her where there is one pupil, a little girl under 10 years of age. Salary, £30 per annum. Please reply to Mrs. Fairfax, Thornfield, near Millcote.
Thornfield, Millcote. Doubtless a neat, orderly place. And Mrs. Fairfax, a black gown and widow's cap. Severe, perhaps, but not uncivil. A model of elderly English respectability. I forward my testimonial to Mrs. Fairfax, and the lady is satisfied. One day suffices to pack my trunk, brush my black travelling dress, prepare my bonnet, gloves and muff. I wait in the parlour for the carriage. At Millcote, another carriage was waiting for me.
How far is it to Thornfield?
Oh, a matter of 6 miles.
How long shall we be before we get there?
Up in an hour and a half.
Judging from the plainness of the servant and the carriage, Mrs. Fairfax is not a very dashing person. So much the better. I wonder if she lives alone, except for this little girl. I pray God she may not turn out a second Mrs. Reed. Well, if she does, I am not bound to stay with her. I can advertise again. We are on a common with houses scattered around. The road is heavy and the night misty. A narrow galaxy of lights on the hillside marks a village. We ascend a drive and come upon the long front of a house. Candlelight gleams from one curtained bow window. All the rest is dark and dim.
Oh, boy. Here we are, miss.
How do you do, my dear? Oh, I'm afraid you've had a tedious ride. John drives so slowly.
Miss Fairfax?
Yes. Do come in, Miss Eyre. You must be cold. John, have the young lady's luggage carried to her room.
Very well, Mrs. Fairfax.
Come in. Come in.
A snug room. A round table by a cheerful fire. An armchair, high-backed and old-fashioned. Mrs. Fairfax is the neatest imaginable little elderly lady in a widow's cap, black silk gown and snowy muslin apron.
May I help you remove your shawl?
Please do not give yourself any trouble.
Oh, it's no trouble. I dare say your own hands are numb. Draw nearer to the fire.
Thank you.
Please, help yourself to refreshments. There are sandwiches and some fruitcake. Let me pour you some tea.
Oh, thank you. Shall I have the pleasure of seeing Miss Fairfax tonight?
Miss Fairfax? Oh, you mean Miss Varon.
Then she is not your daughter.
No, my dear. I am the housekeeper. Oh, I am glad you're come. It will be pleasant to have a companion.
I see.
Thornfield is a fine old hall. Rather neglected of late years, perhaps, but a respectable place. It has been rather lonely. But then, just this autumn, little Adela came. A child makes a house alive all at once, don't you think?
Yes.
And now you are here. Well, there will be company.
I am sure I will be happy here.
When you're warm, I'll show you your bedroom. It's only small, but I thought you'd like it better than one of the large front chambers. They are so dreary and solitary.
At last, I'm in a safe haven. I kneel down at the bedside. Please guide me on my path, and give me the power of meriting the kindness which seems so frankly offered to me before it is earned. When I awake, the sun shines in through the blue chintz window curtains, showing papered walls and a carpeted floor, so unlike the bare planks and stained plaster of Lowood. I rise and dress with care. The mirror shows a plain, little person with irregular features. Well, Jane, now, at last, you will settle in a real home. Oh, how I wish I had rosy cheeks, a straight nose and a small cherry mouth. Well, my hair must be smooth. My frock must be black. I think I shall do respectably enough to appear before Mrs. Fairfax and my new pupil. Along the massive gallery, descend the slippery oak steps. Pictures on the wall, a pendant from the ceiling, a great clock whose case is of oak, curiously carved. Everything is stately and imposing. The hall door stands wide open. The house is 3 stories high, a gentleman's manor house, not a nobleman's seat. Battlements round the top give it a picturesque look. Farther off the hills, quiet and lonely, seeming to embrace Thornfield with a gentle seclusion.
I see you are an early riser, Miss Eyre.
Well, how do you like Thornfield?
I think I shall like it very much.
It is a pretty place. But I fear it would be getting out of order unless Mr. Rochester should visit it rather oftener than he does.
Who is Mr. Rochester?
With the owner of Thornfield.
Oh, I see. So Adela is...
Madame Fairfax?
The present Mr. Rochester's mother was a Fairfax and second cousin to my husband. Adela is Mr. Rochester's ward.
Ah! Good morning, Miss Adela.
Bonjour.
Come and speak to the lady who is to teach you and make you a clever woman.
La gouvernante.
Mary Sweppenmore. Where is she from?
Adela was born in Paris. When she first came here, she could speak no English at all.
Oh, I can speak English. Mademoiselle, what is your name?
Jane Eyre.
I came here in a ship. I can sing. Shall I let you hear me sing?
If you wish, Adela.
After breakfast. Come, we shall go in. You can use the library as a schoolroom. And after lunch, I will show you the rest of the house.
And this is the drawing room.
In what order you keep these rooms, Mrs. Fairfax?
Mr. Rochester's visits are always unexpected. I think it best to keep the rooms in readiness.
Is Mr. Rochester an exacting sort of man?
Not particularly. He has a gentleman's taste and habits.
Is he generally liked?
Oh, yes. The family have always been respected here.
But do you like him?
Well, I have no cause to do otherwise. I believe he is considered a just and liberal landlord.
What is his character?
Oh, his character is unimpeachable. He has travelled a great deal. I dare say he is clever, but I never had much conversation with him.
Is he eccentric?
Well, you cannot always be sure whether he is in jest or earnest. But that is of no consequence. He is a very good master.
How big are the grounds of the house?
The park is very beautiful. We could climb up to the attic and see the view from there if you would like.
It is rather gloomy here.
Indeed it is.
Do the servants sleep here?
No, they're at the back of the house. There now. What do you think?
Oh, wonderful. I did not realize the park was so big.
You can just see the church by the gate. There.
Oh, yes. Mrs. Fairfax?
Yes?
Did you hear something like a laugh?
I heard nothing.
There it is again.
Perhaps it is Grace Poole. She works in one of these rooms sometimes.
I am cold. May we go down?
Of course.
Enough. Oh, Mrs. Fairfax.
Grace, how are you?
Well, ma'am?
Too much noise, Grace. I've told you before.
Yes, ma'am.
Who is she?
She sews and assists the housemaid. She does well enough. There. I'm ready for my tea now.
Adela is a lively child, but also obedient and teachable. She has no great talents, but neither has she any deficiency or vice. We are content in each other's society. Now and then I take a walk in the grounds and find myself longing for a power of vision which might reach the busy world. Towns, regions full of life I have heard of, but never seen. I shall be called discontented. I cannot help it. It is vain to say human beings ought to be satisfied with tranquility. They must have action. Women are supposed to be very calm, generally, but we need exercise for our faculties and a field for our efforts as much as our brothers do. It is nonsense to say we ought to confine ourselves to making puddings and knitting stockings, to playing on the piano and embroidering bags. Grace Poole. Sometimes she comes out of her room with a plate or a tray, goes down to the kitchen and returns bearing a pot of porter. She makes no reply when I attempt to draw her in conversation. October, November, December pass away. January comes. One bright, pleasant day, I walk down to the village. The laning climbs uphill all the way. On the way back, I linger till the sun goes down amongst the trees and sinks crimson and clear. On the hilltop above sits the rising moon, pale as a cloud. From here, I can see Thornfield, its grey battlements and dark rookery rising in the mist.
Aside.
Let me help you up, sir.
I can get up alone. Down, pilot. Damn, I think I've hurt my foot.
If you are hurt and want to help, sir, I can fetch someone from Thornfield's Hall.
Well, thank you, I shall do. No broken bones, only a sprain. Oh!
Oh, I cannot think of leaving you, sir. It's so late an hour in a solitary lane until I see you are fit to mount your horse.
I should think you ought to be at home yourself.
I'm not at all afraid of being out late when it is moonlight.
Where do you come from?
From below.
From below? You mean that house with the battlements?
Yes, sir.
Whose house is it?
Mr. Rochester's.
Do you know Mr. Rochester?
No, I have never seen him.
You're not a servant at the hall. What are you?
I am the governess.
The governess, yeah.
Oh, you are hurt, sir.
You may help me a little, if you'd be so kind.
What shall I do?
Well, if I may just leave on your shoulder.
Oh, yes, here.
That's better. If you walk with me, I can move to my horse. Now, thank you. There we are. Oh!
Shall I walk with you, sir?
But no, I shall be safe now. Thank you very much, Gail. Pilot, come on!
Well, I wonder who he is. A heavy riding cloak. A dark, shadowy face. No matter. The hall is dark. A warm glow suffuses both it and the lower steps of the oak staircase. In the great dining room, a fire in the grate shines on the marble hearth and brass fire irons, revealing the purple draperies and polished furniture in its pleasant radiance.
Oh, Jane, you're back.
Yes.
What dog is this, Mrs. Fairfax?
This is Pilot. He came with the master.
With whom?
With Mr. Rochester. He's just arrived.
We have Mr. Rochester?
Yes. His horse fell and his ankle is sprained.
I see.
I'm afraid you and Adela will have to vacate the library. Mr. Rochester needs it to work.
Adela, English, please. Oh, yes. He has a present for me. And perhaps for you as well, mademoiselle. Monsieur spoke of you. He asked me your name, and if you are a small person, thin and a little pale. I said yes, because it is true, is it not, mademoiselle?
Enough, Adela. Jane, Mr. Rochester would be glad if you would take tea with him in the drawing room.
Oh, very well.
Half reclined on a couch is my traveller. His foot supported by a cushion. Broad eyebrows, a square forehead, a sweep of black hair. A decisive nose, more remarkable for character than beauty.
Here is Miss Eyre, sir.
Let Miss Eyre be seated. Oh,
thank you.
Will you hand Mr. Rochester's cup?
Oh, certainly, Mrs. Fairfax. Here you are, Mr. Rochester.
Thank you. Now, Miss Eyre, you have been resident in my house for 3 months.
Yes, sir.
And you come from...
From Lowood School.
How long were you there?
8 years.
8 years. No wonder you have the look of another world. When you came on me in the lane, I thought unaccountably of fairy tales. I had half a mind to demand whether you had bewitched my horse. Who are your parents?
I have none.
I thought not. If you disown parents, you must have some sort of kinsfolk, uncles and aunts.
None that I ever saw.
And your home?
I have none.
Who recommended you to come here?
I advertised, and Mrs. Fairfax answered my advertisement.
Miss Eyre is an invaluable companion.
Don't trouble yourself to give her a character. I shall judge for myself. She began by felling my horse.
Sir?
I have her to thank for this spray.
Oh, how do you mean?
Miss Eyre, have you ever lived in a town?
No, sir.
Have you seen much society?
None but the pupils and teachers at Lowood, and now the inmates of Thornfield.
Have you read much?
Only such books as have come my way, and they have not been numerous.
You have lived the life of a nun. No doubt you are well drilled in religious forms. Brocklehurst, who directs Lowood, is a parson, is he not?
Yes, sir.
And you girls probably worshipped him as a convent full of religious would worship the director.
Oh, no.
God, a novice not worship the priest? Sounds blasphemous. What age were you when you went to Lowood?
About 10.
And you stayed there 8 years. You are now then 18.
I am, sir.
Arithmetic, you see, is useful. Without its aid, I should hardly have been able to guess your age. What did you learn at Lowood? Can you play?
A little.
Of course. That is the established answer. Go to the piano.
Are you accustomed to giving orders in that kind of a way?
Excuse my command. I'm used to saying, do this, and it is done. And I can't alter my habits for one new person. Go then, if you please, to the piano and play a tune.
Very well, Mr. Rochester.
Enough. I play a little, I see, like any other English schoolgirl. Perhaps rather better than some, but not well. Adela showed me some sketches which she said were yours. Wild seascapes. I don't know whether they were entirely of your doing. Probably a master aided you.
Not at all.
Ah, that pricks your pride. When did you find time to do them?
I did them in the last two vacations I spent at Lowood when I had no other occupation.
Where did you get your copies?
Out of my head.
That head I see now on your shoulder?
Yes, sir.
Has it other furniture of the same kind within?
I should think it may have. I should hope better.
And were you not satisfied with the result of your ardent labours?
Far from it. I was tormented by the contrast between my idea and my handiwork.
Well, that will do for tonight. What are you about, Miss Eyre, to let Adela sit up for so long? Take her to bed. Adela, give me a kiss. I wish you all good night now.
Good night, sir. Good night, sir.
Good night, Mr. Rochester.
You said Mr. Rochester was not strikingly peculiar, Mrs. Fairfax.
Well, is he?
I think so. He's very changeful and abrupt.
True. No doubt he may appear so to a stranger. But I'm so accustomed to his manner, I never think of it.
Well, I must say I find him very haughty and very cold. Not at all what a gentleman should be. I am not sure I shall like him very well.
And yet, despite his abrupt and forthright manner, Mr. Rochester's face haunted my dreams that night.
That was episode 1 of Jane Eyre by Charlotte Bronte. Dramatized for radio by Micheline Wonder. Jane Eyre was played by Sophie Thompson, and Mr. Rochester by Kieran Hines. Mrs. Reed was played by Elizabeth Bell, Mr. Brocklehurst by Julian Glover, Mrs. Fairfax by Anne Scalibras, and Miss Temple by Frances Jeter. Helen and Bessie were played by Elaine Claxton, Miss Scatchard and Grace Poole by Tina Gray, John Reed by Daniel Main, Adela by Una Beeson, John by Gareth Armstrong, and The Woman's Voice by Vivian Rochester. Jane Eyre was directed by Cherry Cookson.